and live. Studio A, Global Media News. SUNY Old Westbury College campus in Old Westbury, New York.
It's time for a new media beat on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Tyler Lusane.
And I'm John DeLiso. Welcome to New Media Beat. There is a world of media out there. Let's explore.
From Ukraine?
Why is the Ukrainian government banning Telegram from state-issued devices? How is Telegram playing a part in the war in Ukraine?
From Indonesia, can a government ban online gambling?
What's behind Indonesia's crackdown on internet gambling? Will this prohibition work? How big is the gambling problem in Indonesia?
From France, we have two reports from France. First, why is President Macron taxing music streaming services?
And second, why is President Macron so angry at the news media? Was there a leak? Should reporters use leaked information? Did the French news media distort Macron's views on Israel and the conflict in Gaza?
From South Korea, have you heard of Melon?
Melon is a very popular music streaming service in South Korea. Which streaming service is the most popular with Korean music lovers? Is it Melon or not?
From Russia, let's talk about disinformation and artificial intelligence.
Are Russia's two biggest exports war and disinformation? Can Russian influence campaigns disrupt elections? Is Russia using AI-generated disinformation to disrupt democracies? How is AI changing disinformation?
From Australia, does Australia have a misinformation problem?
What kind of misinformation are the Aussies worried about? What is the Australian government doing about this? Can a new law protect Australians from all the misinformation that is clogging their news feeds?
From India, can Narendra Modi's government tell the foreign streaming platforms what to produce and what to cut?
What can Amazon and Netflix do if the Indian government objects? Who should control what Indian viewers see? A conservative government or global platform giants like Amazon and Netflix who produce and distribute so much content in India?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. There is a bloody war in Ukraine. Russia continues to occupy much of Ukraine. The media play an important role during wartime. Wartime media is full of propaganda and can pose a security threat to the war effort. Governments at war are more concerned with security and victory than the free expression. Governments at war censor and ban media that pose threats. The government in Ukraine is concerned about the security of one important message service, Telegram. Why? Emily Familetti is here to explain. Emily, let's start with the basics. What is Telegram?
Telegram is widely popular in Ukraine and throughout many countries. Due to the fast-growing popularity of this app, banning it on state-issued devices has not been easy. Nearly 800 million people use Telegram monthly. Before the Russian invasion, 20% of Ukrainians used Telegram as a news source, but now it's up to 72%. Telegram allows you to stay up to date by sending messages, photos, videos, as well as create groups and channels. You are able to access Telegram on many different devices at the same time due to seamless sync. Telegram allows you to be anonymous, which gives people the freedom to post whatever they want. This also creates a sense of chaos of not knowing what to believe. Because Telegram allows you to be anonymous, countries like Russia are able to hack into Ukraine's Telegram and use it as a warfare tactic.
Why is Ukraine banning the use of Telegram for state-issued devices?
Ukraine has banned the use of Telegram on state-issued devices due to the security concerns related to the ongoing war in Russia. As a way for soldiers to communicate with military information, Telegram is an important platform for many countries. The head of Ukraine's military believes that Russian special services has the ability to hack into their Telegram. Soldiers in Ukraine receive thousands of messages a week with missile locations so that they can track them and keep their country safe. Telegram messages, including deleted ones, as well as user personal information, could be accessed by Russian special services. If Russia were to hack into Ukraine's Telegram channels, they could post false information and create confusion within their nation. They could interfere with communication between their military and use private messages to track and locate certain people. The ban on Telegram on state-issued devices is aimed at addressing national security risks rather than restricting freedom of speech. Personal devices and work devices are not banned. Telegram is very popular throughout Ukraine and is used to communicate and find out news information. Ukraine's effort to ban Telegram is to ensure the nation's security and make sure Russia is unable to access any government information.
How is Telegram responding to the ban?
Telegram is responding to Ukraine by claiming that they have never provided any messages or data to any country, including Russia. Telegram emphasizes that all deleted messages are removed permanently and cannot be accessed. Telegram believes that any incidents that involve data being released was from computer viruses or someone taking their device, but not from Telegram itself. Telegram is the most used platform where Ukrainians receive their daily information from, and despite the ban, government and military personnel will continue to update their Telegram page. Even with all the claims made by Ukraine about Telegram, they said they would be interested in reviewing any evidence where it shows them leaking information to different countries.
What is Russia doing to Ukraine's Telegram?
Russia is using Telegram to spread false information and create a divide within Ukraine. They have created many channels where they criticize Ukraine's mobility efforts and make the government look like the enemy. Russia has also created channels to mimic the Ukrainian government and spread conflicting information. They use trending and popular hashtags to make sure it reaches as many users as possible and make this information look credible. Russia's goal is to lead people to doubt the Ukraine government and encourage resistance against it. Ukraine will become weakened by false information, filling its Telegram, and causing a rift in its community. For New Media Beat, I am Emily Femmeletti. Back to you, Tylan.
Thanks, Emily. Indonesia is a long way from Ukraine. My co-host, John Taliso, has a report about the fight against online gambling in Indonesia. Indonesia has more than 210 million internet users. More than 65% of Indonesians are online. How free is the internet in Indonesia? Freedom House reports that the internet in Indonesia is partly free, scoring 49 out of 100 on their internet freedom scale. Can a government keep its millions of citizens from gambling online? Is the government protecting Indonesians or controlling them? What makes internet gambling such a threat to Indonesia? John, why does the Indonesian government want to ban online gambling websites?
The Indonesian government wants to ban online gambling for a multitude of reasons. Indonesian Communications Minister Budi Air Sitadi told Reuters, "We're waging a universal war against online gambling. Online gambling is so concerning that it's sucking people's blood dry. Indonesia is the most populous Muslim country in the world, and gambling is a strictly prohibited activity for those that follow their religion. Because of this, online gambling has been an illegal activity in the country. However, millions of Indonesians still engage in it, and it has taken both a societal and economic toll on many citizens."
What effects have online gambling websites had on Indonesian citizens?
Online gambling has taken a major toll on those who engage in it. Multiple stories of Indonesian citizens committing suicides or killing family members over online gambling-related issues have come to light in recent months. According to a report by CNN Indonesia, a 36-year-old man from Jakarta was arrested by Indonesian authorities for reportedly selling his 11-month-old son to purchase two new phones so he could gamble online. VOA News, a U.S. government-funded news publication, also reported that a policewoman from the Java region set her husband on fire due to his gambling addiction. Other reports of a man robbing and killing his mother to fund his gambling addiction have also been reported. Not only has online gambling had negative effects on adults in Indonesia, but it has also affected many children. The Indonesian Financial Transactions Reports and Analysis Center has reported that they discovered nearly 200,000 instances of children aged 11 to 19 that have engaged in online gambling, as reported by Tempo. Additionally, they also found cases where over 1,000 children under the age of 11 have also participated in online gambling. It is clear that the existence of online gambling in Indonesia has taken a major societal toll. The Indonesian government has reported a spike in divorce requests from wives who have husbands addicted to online gambling, as well as a spike in suicides by those in financial trouble due to online gambling. The Indonesian government is prepared to take major steps against the online gambling industry.
What restrictions has the government imposed on online gambling and those who engage in it?
The Financial Services Authority is creating an information system that would store the names of citizens who participate in online gambling. Through this database, Providers would be able to deny financial services to those who gamble online if their name is in the system. The Bank of Indonesia has also been working to identify bank accounts that are suspected of online gambling and shut their accounts down. The Bank of Indonesia has found nearly 600 e-wallet accounts that have connections to online gambling. The Bank of Indonesia has also asked the FSA to block 7,600 accounts that gamble online, according to Bernama. VPN applications, which are programs used to access websites and services unavailable in your home country, have become increasingly popular for Indonesians who want to access online gambling websites. However, the government has started to ban VPN websites as well, further inhibiting those who want to gamble online.
Has there been any reduction in online gambling since the government has taken a stand against it?
Yes, Indonesia's fight against online gambling has proved to be a success so far. According to Asian Gaming Brief, the government's actions from banning gambling websites to blocking VPN programs have decreased online gambling activity by 50%. The Financial Analysis Center has also reported that public deposits into online gambling have reduced by 212 million USD. For New Media Beat, I'm John DeLiso. Back to you, Tylan.
Thank you, John. Up next, we have media news from France. Why has President Macron's government imposed a tax on music streaming services? What do the giants of streaming music think about this new tax? Will Spotify pay? Will music lovers pay more to stream music?
Let's talk about music streaming in France. How do music lovers in France listen to music? Which streaming platforms have the most listeners? Jesse Manuel is here to explain a new tax on music streaming in France. Jesse, which are the most popular music streaming apps? Are any of them French?
Music lovers in France primarily listen to music through streaming platforms, with Spotify being the one with the most listeners. 31.7% of music streaming users globally had a Spotify membership as of the third quarter of 2023. The music streaming service is Deezer.
For what reason was the tax imposed?
The French government imposed a tax on the music streaming platform to support the local music industry and cultural sector.
Who benefits and what issues does it resolve?
Since the money raised is meant to support and promote French music, local musicians and cultural institutions stand to gain the most from this tax. The tax wanted by the government was to finance the National Center for Music.
How will artists be affected?
French President Emmanuel Macron does not agree with the ways with how the streaming services pay the artists streaming more money. So he made this tax so it would be more equitable for French artists who only had average listening.
Thanks, Jesse. Let's stay in France for more media news. New Media Beat reporter Nelson Benitez has been digging into a recent conflict between President Macron and the news media. President Macron is angry with the French media. Is this about news leaks, distortions, or false information? What can French journalists have done to make him so mad at the press? Nelson, what started this conflict, according to Macron?
So he stated in a recent press conference on October 17th that he was upset at the French media groups and journalists for distorting his comments he made regarding Israel and Gaza. He said a visibly frustrated Macron later Thursday began his press conference after an EU summit in Brussels with a tirade against those he remarked distorted his remarks made in closed-door cabinet meeting, which showed a lack of professionalism in their work. This was according to France 24. The president continued to say in his speech, "I must tell you how astonished I was to read so many comments, reactions, including from political leaders, foreign and French, to remarks I made without seeking to know what exactly I said." So basically the French president was not happy and felt that the journalists had a lack of ethics and respect when it came to reserving private conversations.
Need to respect private presidential conversations.
So this is an interesting topic because it goes along with personal privacy or personal conversations should be leaked or should be held private. The APP, which is the Association of the Presidential Press, the group of correspondents that cover the president in France, made some comments regarding this issue. They said, "Our work cannot be limited to repeating official statements. The definition of journalism cannot be a presidential prerogative." This statement was made in response to the remarks made by the president. Similar statements were made by a member of the Green Party, which is the opposing political party of President Macron. He said on X, formerly known as Twitter, which with heavy sarcasm, "That's right, journalists, why do you need to simply and blindly reproduce official press releases? Why bother searching by cross-checking sources to seek the truth?" The issue of security and what should be deemed as private conversation is the main point of interest here. Should the public know about private conversations, especially from a presidential figure, or should the president have the rights of private privacy when speaking at private events? So this is something that is still a very big issue that they have to deal with, and even us in general. It's just always like an issue of like, do we deserve private privacy when we're speaking in private, or is it okay for journalists, or is it their job to leak all the information, even if it's private?
What were the comments that made the French media groups upset?
So the media groups and journalists were upset at specific comments that the president made during the speech he did regarding Israel. They said the remarks, according to Macron, that Israel needed to adhere to UN resolutions in its campaigns in Lebanon and Gaza, according to French 24. These comments were the statements that fueled frustration in France and that the president felt were distorted by them. In France, the Speaker of the Upper House, Senate, said that he was astonished by the remarks and accused the president of showing his ignorance of history. So basically, the comments that the president made regarding Israel was to kind of adhere to the UN's and UN's like laws and regulations, and a lot of people didn't like what he was saying.
French media had a history of issues with the president regarding misinformation.
Yeah, so this isn't the first time that the president, specifically Macron, has accused media and journalists of quote-unquote fake news. The president had to combat misinformation, even made a law in 2018 regarding fake news in the media outlets. According to BBC, in 2018, after his election, French President Macron had announced plans to make a new law to combat so-called fake news. His target was social media, but he also wanted to have tougher rules for journalists that released the information to the press. So he deemed this instance as fake news and misquoting him, which also stems from his history of misinformation that he feels like the journalists have with him.
Thank you, Nelson.
We are jumping to South Korea to talk about music streaming with Victoria Lapkowitz. We've had a report today about music streaming tax in France. Now we are talking about the music streaming services in South Korea. How do South Koreans listen to their music online? Are the most popular music apps and platforms Korean? Do Koreans listen to the same giant streaming services that we do here in the U.S.? Victoria Lapkowitz is here to introduce us to a South Korean music streaming service called Melon. Victoria, can you start with a quick intro to the music streaming market in South Korea? What are the most popular music apps in South Korea?
Once upon a time, Melon was the largest streaming service in South Korea. Now South Korea has multiple services. These are the services that are listed in the order of popularity today, as according to Money Today. YouTube, an American company, has overtaken Melon in the terms of popularity with 7 million users in South Korea. Melon remains in second place with 5 million users. Genie Music has 1.9 million users. Flow Music Streaming Service has 1.4 million users. Naver Vibe has 1 million users. A Swedish company named Spotify has a presence in South Korea with 540,000 users. Geico Music, a company which owns Melon, has 200,000 users. Bugs, a music streaming service that's been around since 1999, has 20,000 users. Melon would start in 2004 and be one of the largest streaming service until YouTube Music has been established in 2018. Keiko, a South Korean entertainment company would overtake Mellon and would merge in 2009, eventually merging with SM Entertainment in 2023, causing a monopoly concern.
How has Mellon contributed to the growth and popularity of K-pop for both mainstream and independent artists?
According to the Music Industry Updates, Mellon has helped promote K-pop artists to the Korean and international consumer by being able to reach many countries and new and existing fans. This would allow musicians to achieve international success as well as have a chance to claim music awards from award shows such as Billboard Awards, American Music Awards, MTV, and VMAs, along with a few more international awards. Mellon has helped the bands like BTS, Blackpink, and EXO reach international fame. When artists release their music on Mellon, they have a chance to end up on Mellon's charts, which is shown to help bring attention and success to the artist. This could help the artist who is starting out get recognition to the artist or group.
What are the benefits of Mellon's collaboration with TikTok?
As of early October, Mellon joins competitors on TikTok with their new add-to-music app feature. This collaboration allows users to save music that they have discovered directly on TikTok directly to their Mellon playlist. As Michael Cumarelli, a spokesperson for TikTok, would state, this collaboration means that millions of users who use Mellon would be able to save, share, and listen to songs that they have found off TikTok. Another benefit of this collaboration is that it could lead to increased user engagement, as users will be willing to return to Mellon to enjoy the new music that they found off TikTok. Min Wow Khan, the head of Mellon business at Kiko, would state that the partnership with TikTok is beneficial as it is the leading social media platform for music discovery, with the service existing users and a potential for attracting new users to the Mellon streaming app.
What are the risks associated with Mellon's merge with SM Entertainment?
The merge between Keiko and SM Entertainment has created a potential music empire, which could cause a significant problem that needs to be addressed. While the Fair Trade Commission approved the merger, there are risks that need to be acknowledged. One of these concerns is the possibility of a market control, where the company would give artists signed under SM Entertainment more attention to those who choose not to work with them. The idea of Mellon having the ability to release their music could be seen as a conflict, as this will allow Mellon's an insider's advantage compared to their competitors.
What measures are put into place to ensure that Kakao and SM Entertainment don't give specialty treatment to their artists on Mellon?
To ensure that Kakao and SM Entertainment doesn't provide special preferential treatment to the artists, the Fair Trade Commission has enforced two measures to ensure fair and equal competition in the digital music market. The first measure prohibits Kakao from withholding any music from their competitors without a legitimate reason. This ensures that customers are able to get the same music on all platforms. This would prevent the company from having an unfair advantage over their competitors due to doing business with the musicians. The second measure is that Kakao would have to establish a third-party board of 5 people. The board will be assigned the task of making sure that the company doesn't give favorable treatment to artists signed with them. The presence of a third-party board would ensure that Kakao is treating all artists equally. However, these measures are only in place for 3 years. It is important to wonder what will happen after the 3 years is over. Media beat on Victoria Lapkus.
Thanks, Victoria. Let's head to Russia to talk about disinformation campaigns and artificial intelligence with Michaela Rella. Russia is a major source of disinformation targeting democracies around the world. Russian disinformation is not new. Soviet propaganda targeting the West was a big issue during the Cold War. The Cold War is over, but the disinformation campaigns have not stopped. Vladimir Putin's Russia has been waging psychological war and mass-producing foreign influence campaigns. What's new? It seems that Russia is using the latest in AI technology to generate disinformation. Michaela, what is Russia up to? And is artificial intelligence going to make Russian disinformation harder to stop?
Russia is using AI to spread false information across the U.S., which is very concerning. AI can create content super fast. It can create misleading stories quicker than people can keep up with, making it hard to catch everything. AI can then see what people like and create fake stories which will influence the public's opinion. During the election, Russia has been using AI to create fake news, which is causing mistrust in the U.S.
How have foreign countries like Russia used AI to spread disinformation throughout the U.S.?
Russia and other countries are using AI to generate very realistic fake content. These are things like videos, news articles, and even social media accounts, which look completely legit. They look like they could be coming from well-known media sources, which make them tough to spot. For example, in a recent video reported by Microsoft researchers, an actor falsely accuses Vice President Kamala Harris of a hit and run that supposedly paralyzed a young girl. This is showing how AI can be used to create dramatic, completely fake stories. And that's just one case. During this election, we've seen similar AI-generated videos and articles with made-up accusations against Harris. According to the Washington Post, these involve things like Harris illegally poaching overseas and other stories that capture the president making false remarks against President Trump. These are totally fake, but they spread like wildfire before anyone can stop them. Once these stories are out there, a lot of people have already seen, shared, and maybe even believed them.
What is the motive behind Russia using AI to manipulate the public before the U.S. election?
Russia's main goal is to chip away at the Americans' trust in democracy. They want to create doubt in the election process, making people question the candidates and stir up tension between both political sides. In other words, Russia's hoping that by playing on our social and political differences, they can weaken the confidence in the United States. A Reuters report came out and said Russia is using a mix of subversive, undeclared, criminal, and coercive tactics to do this. By using AI to spread fake news and create confusion, Russia is aiming to create enough doubt and fear that Americans might end up questioning the election's outcome no matter who wins. This larger plan even includes targeting figures like Vice President Kamala Harris to keep the public focused on rumors and doubts rather than facts. It's all about creating an environment where trust in the government and the election process is so shaken that it leaves lasting damage.
What has the U.S. done to control this AI influence and misinformation?
The government's teamed up with tech companies like OpenAI, Facebook, and X to track down and remove these AI-generated content. They're developing better ways to detect and take down deepfakes, bot-driven posts, and other AI-powered fake media. For instance, X recently took down Russian bot networks that were spreading fake election content for 2024. And OpenAI reported blocking accounts, including a Russian one called Doppelganger, which used AI to post fake comments in multiple languages. On top of this, the U.S. has started a public awareness campaign to help voters recognize disinformation. The idea is to teach people how to spot misleading content so they can be more cautious about what they believe and share online. For New Media Beat, this is Michaela Rella. Back to you, Tylan.
Thank you, Michaela. Let's keep talking about misinformation and disinformation. What can governments do to protect their citizens from misinformation? Can governments stop the flow of misinformation with new laws? Australia thinks it can. We will return with a report about new anti-misinformation law in Australia.
Discover technological.
My co-host, Tylan Lassane, is ready to tell us about the misinformation problem in Australia. What can a government do to protect its citizens from all the false information swirling around the internet? Thailand, tell us about the problem. What kind of misinformation is being spread around Australia?
False information really had a big impact in Australia during the COVID-19 crisis, especially on social media. There are all these rumors about the content and safety of vaccines spreading around. Some conspiracy theorists even claim that COVID was intentionally created or was part of a plan for population control, which really took off online. And it wasn't just COVID misinformation on climate. On climate change is still an issue, with people saying it's not real or that our actions don't really affect global warming. That kind of talk really undermines efforts to actually address the problem. Then there were unverified treatments for COVID, despite a lack of scientific support. And when it comes to politics, false information pops up during elections too. Whether it's about election procedures, voter fraud, all of these are examples of how misinformation has impacted health and politics and society as a whole in Australia.
What are the key features of this law?
There is a new legislation coming up that is going to require media outlets and search engines to actually spell out how they handle misinformation, kind of laying it all out for the public to see. This kind of transparency is really important because it helps people understand how these platforms actually go about checking and managing the content we see. The point of this law is to build a bit more awareness so users know what's going on behind the scenes and how these platforms work. Ideally, it's meant to improve people's media literacy and give users a better sense of responsibility when they are consuming content. I think it's interesting because right now a lot of people don't really have a clue about the process these platforms use to fact check or manage information, which makes it harder to trust what we're seeing online. By making companies lay out their protocols, it should hopefully make people feel more informed and maybe even more confident about the content they're engaging with.
Who is going to be enforcing this new law?
To make sure these new regulations are actually followed, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, or the ACMA, is going to be in charge of enforcement. They've got the authority to impose fines and other sanctions on platforms that don't follow the rules laid out in the law. Basically, it's all about holding digital companies accountable for what gets shared on their platforms, pushing them to take an active role in fighting misinformation. This approach is designed to make these companies take more responsibility for what ends up on their sites, so it's not just a free-for-all with misinformation spreading unchecked. It's really about creating a system where platforms have to think more carefully about the content they're allowing to take and take real steps to managing it responsibly. From New Media Beat, I'm Thailand Lassane. Back to you, John.
Thanks, Thailand. We have media news from India. Indians love movies. Bollywood is a global giant in the film industry. India has a massive audience for streaming media. Variety reports that there are more than 547 million Indians watching streaming media. Almost 100 million viewers are paying for streaming subscriptions. It's a huge market. The giants of global streaming, like Netflix and Amazon, want to reach those viewers. But if they want to tap into the Indian market, they will need to play by the rules set by the Hindu nationalist government of Narendra Modi. The Modi government has concerns about foreign content. Are the movies on streaming on foreign platforms a threat to Hindu culture? Maria Duran has a report about the cancellation of a Netflix production project. Did Netflix cancel this project to appease the Modi government? Maria, tell us about this canceled Netflix project. Who is the director and what was the project? Why was the Maximum City project canceled? How did Anurag respond?
The political pressures and the sensitive nature of the content played a role in the cancellation. It was not the content of the film. He was a political critic of Modi. Netflix did not want to have someone that was against Modi. When Netflix canceled the Maximum City project, it had a horrible effect on Anurag. The cancellation of this project was a setback for his career, as it prevented him from bringing a significant story to the audience.
What are some of the key themes Anurag Kashyap explores in his films?
Anurag Kashyap often explores themes such as complexities of Indian society, corruption, crime, and the darker aspects of human nature in his films. He delves into social and political issues
often portraying the gritty reality of life in India. His storytelling is known for its raw and realistic approach, shedding light on the struggles and moral ambiguities faced by his characters.
How has the political environment in India influenced the content produced by streaming platforms like Netflix and Prime Video?
The political environment in India, particularly under Modi's BJP government, has significantly influenced the content produced by streaming platforms like Netflix and Prime Video. There have been increased pressures and regulations that affect what can be shown, leading to a more cautious approach by these platforms in selecting and producing content. This has resulted in some projects being altered or shelved to avoid political controversy. For New Media Beat, this is Maria Duran. Back to you, John.
Thank you, Maria. That's all for this week.
Thanks for listening. New Media Beat is produced by Gabriel Gambuza and Genevieve Chapathi. Our engineer is Jaden Nunez. And my co-host is John DeLiso. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Hylan. Today, we heard reports from Nelson Benitez, John DeLiso, Maria Duran, Emily Familetti, Victoria Lapkowitz, Tylan Lassane, Jesse Manuel, and Michaela Rella.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed. Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.